April has been a heck of a month here in South Africa. David Bacher from Corian, as always, with us just after month end to take us through the vital statistics for investors. Well, I guess it's a month that was punctuated by the big Australian wanting to buy the little South African. Used to be the big South African, Anglo-American. It's now not so big anymore, is it, David? It's unfathomable that you have an Australian BHP, which is now four times the size of Anglo-American and can easily kind of swallow it up. And the part that shook me was when BHP said it'll be material, but it's not really going to make a huge difference in our lives. Well, of course, they've since said no, that isn't quite the case. But it is interesting that that was the main headline. Outside of that, though, it's been an interesting month in the month of April, just behind.
It certainly was. A change. It was quite a challenging month for the markets or the international markets, and that was influenced largely by a couple of economic updates that weren't too optimistic. Firstly, US GDP growth for the first quarter slowed to just 1.6%, and that was a sharp drop from the previous quarter's robust performance. And secondly, the latest inflation data wasn't exactly reassuring. The stubborn inflation suggests that the Fed might keep interest rates high for an extended period. So due to these concerns, global markets had a little bit of a retreat. Global equities fell by about 3.3%. And in the US, the NASDAQ actually had its first down month since October last year, dropping 4.4%.
Well, we're going to go through the details as we always do in this monthly update. But it's interesting to note There was even speculation that U.S. interest rates would go up again. And it's only a few months ago where everybody had decided that U.S. interest rates would fall. And the fact that Jay Powell, the Fed chairman, said that it's unlikely that they're going to go up, but they aren't going to fall for a while, actually brought a little bit of happiness to certain investors who'd been looking at the downside. Amazing how quickly things do change in these investment markets.
It's quite staggering. About 4 months ago, as you said, the market was expecting 3, 4, 5 interest rate cuts this year. Now, at best, the market is discounting one cut, and that's December right at the end. So a big change in market expectations. And as I said, that's fueled by pessimistic inflation data.
Okay, so let's get into the decoding of the month, as we do every month at this time. You did mention global equities down 3.3%. Gold had a good month, though.
Yeah, gold's had a fantastic year. It's up about, I think it's about 14% for the year, even more than equity markets. So for those gold bulls who have been crying for a long time, it certainly has been a good 2024.
What about property, though? It's interesting that the data that you're showing us reflects that the property market has been the one that has performed worse in the past month. What would have been behind that?
Well, property is very sensitive to interest rates. So higher for longer interest rates has a big impact on property, obviously on mortgages, ability for consumers to pay back their funding. So being a highly interest rate sensitive sector, higher for longer interest rates, it's not unexpected that property would be a victim of that.
I was reading some reports recently about the UK property market and how that's come under an enormous amount of pressure as well, which of course is aligned with what you've just told us. But the emerging markets, nice to see, given South Africa's exposure to China, that the Chinese equities are coming back to quite a high degree.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a long way to go. At Corian, we've been looking at China for a long time. We've had some exposure, but we actually, fortunately, did increase it recently. And if you just look at their valuations, China's market, their broad market, hasn't traded at such low valuations since 2001. So probably for some good reasons. I mean, we're all concerned about regulation there and its impact on companies, and also government, their ability to fuel the economy again has been questioned. But at those valuations, you know, we did see value in China, and fortunately that played out. But as I said, it has underperformed by such a large extent over the last 10 years that perhaps this is just the beginning of a turn.
And the South African market was helped along by Anglo-American, unquestionably, but it still had a good month relative to developed markets.
Correct. Fortunately, our resources sector, and as you said, driven probably by Anglos, jumped about 7%. Our market is about a quarter exposed to the resources, so that kind of uplift will carry our market. But similarly to our China valuations, our market is also trading at extreme low valuations. So it's nice to know that we did have an outperformance of international markets. But in truth, this is just a reversal really of last month, because the level of outperformance was similar to what we lost last month.
It is also the month when the quarterly results start coming through in the United States. And that can lead to some extremely volatile conclusions.
Correct. So what we thought was truly remarkable was the shifts in the market values of major companies. Alphabet, the holding company of Google, saw its market value increase by nearly $200 billion following their earnings report, and Nvidia experienced a loss even greater than this. And these movements are very unusual for companies of this scale. You typically find smaller companies might experience such volatility, but it's very rare for giants of the industry to have this kind of volatility. I mean, a movement of $200 billion in a day, that's equivalent to the South African whole collective investment scheme. That's just one company moving in one day. So just to put that into perspective, how massive these companies are and how big these moves have been, it really is remarkable.
South Africa's GDP is around $400 billion. So if you can imagine, you take 50 cents in every rand spent by everyone in the South African economy in a whole year. And that's the change only. That's the change in the valuation of a company like Alphabet in a single day. Tesla did doing really nicely, and that's Elon Musk pulling a rabbit out of the hat there. But both Meta and Nvidia, are they now on your buying screen yet, given that that they've come from, well, pretty high levels?
They're probably not on our buying screen at the moment. I mean, the Magnificent Seven and those companies had an amazing run. If you actually compare their earnings growth since the low of 2022, the earnings growth of the Magnificent Seven, the earnings that they've just reported or expected to report are up 58%. And that's obviously driven its share appreciation. But if you compare that to the rest of the 493 shares in the S&P 500, their earnings are actually retreated. So, we think that a slight tick up in the earnings of the broader market, we see more value outside the Magnificent Seven as things stand, and would rather go into the smaller companies in the US.
Well, on the Magnificent Seven, we're mentioning here Nvidia down 10% on one day, Meta down 10%, Alphabet up 10%, and Tesla up 15%.
Was up 15%, yeah.
Yeah, on a single day. But then you've just had results coming out from another member of the Magnificent Seven, Apple, and that share price in after-hour trade up by 6% on a 2% gain on the day. So it just shows, even though they are huge, these companies can move quite dramatically. The rand, though, under a lot of pressure, but again, from the international markets this morning, the yen hit a 35-year low? But it's something in well over three decades. So the rand is not on its own.
Correct. And, maybe people will lose sight of the fact that it's been very much a strong dollar globally, and lots of currencies have struggled. So with regards to Japan, they do have obviously have their own unique issues. The biggest threat to them is deflation. So they've kept a very, very loose monetary policy. We're keeping interest rates incredibly low, sometimes even negative. And when you have the US on the opposite side, actually increasing interest rates and giving investors a bit bigger yield, well, investors will look elsewhere for better returns. And that's obviously led to a further decline in the yen's value.
It's very interesting, the appreciation or the benefit you get from being the world's reserve currency. And the Americans have been living off that for quite some time. Here in South Africa, equities, as we mentioned earlier, did do better. But the property sector still under a bit of pressure.
Yeah, for similar reasons, all about interest rates really having an impact on the local market. Although, you know, down half a basis point or 60 basis points is not much. It had a reasonably good year-to-date return. So I wouldn't read too much into that. It's nice to see our South African bonds, which has been very, very weak, also up about 1.4%. So, and that was largely due to favorable polling stats that came out, favorable in the sense that financial markets seem to think that the elections or the doomsday results is probably less of a risk than what was initially expected.
It's going to be so interesting to see how the public do vote or how voters do cast their ballots, given that the pollsters have got it so wrong elsewhere in the world on so many occasions. And there are a number of people here in South Africa who make strong arguments for the polls being wrong as well. But we shall have to wait and see. The big bid, BHP Billiton Anglo American, your thoughts on that?
I think there's going to be a lot more news to come on this. I don't think it's an easy deal. In fact, just before I came to this podcast, I saw that Glencore, a report that Glencore is likely to make a bid for Anglo American as well. So, yeah, that's also ignoring competition board. It's a big transaction. I think it will fuel a lot of corporate activity in the sector. I think that the BHP's ability to buy Anglo American at this valuation is probably low. And they will need to go into a bidding war, it seems, with some competitors to get Anglo-American. So lots to watch in this space.
We've had some really good stories on this from our international partners. This morning's one that you mentioned was an exclusive with our partners in London and Reuters on Glencore looking at it. And then there was a very good piece from the Financial Times that is on BizNews that you can go and read about. They call him Meticulous Mike, the CEO of BHP Billiton, who has planned this apparently to the last detail. He's on his way to South Africa, or might have even arrived by now, and he wants to try and convince the authorities that it's going to be a good deal for South Africa this time around, even though they're pretty skeptical about BHP's involvement here, given the deal they did with Billiton and then hiving off their South African assets because they didn't want them. But not surprisingly, the best performing share of our top 40 was Anglo American, up by a third in the month. Results from Capitec were well received, and interesting to see Northam and Mondi also double digit gains.
Yeah, the Capitec results were staggering for such a big banker to have I think it grew 10% client base and have about 22 million clients. From a bank that, you know, 20 years ago, I don't even know when it was formed, but it wasn't close to being the size that it is at the moment. And they really fantastic earnings. So on the back of that, they were the best performing bank and financial share. Mondi was for different reasons. They were pursuing a merger with a UK firm called DS Smith. And it seems like that merger is not going to go through. In fact, it's not going to go through. And shareholders obviously didn't like the planned transaction, and when they announced that the merger wasn't going through, you know, it went up 10% in a day.
And the worst performers?
So it was two resource shares, different resources, which is quite surprising given that the broader sector was up 7%, but that's mainly fueled, as we said, by Anglo American. On the Sasol side, which is down 9%, their share price fell after it reported a 9% drop in the Q3 production, and that was largely due to reduced equipment availability and operational instability at Secunda operations. So that was a significant headwind for the company. And then Anglo American Platts also production issues came out with much worse production volumes than expected. And a result of that, production, I think, declined by about 7%. And its share price also under pressure, being the worst performing share of the top 40, down 14%.
So it's all to do with management. When your management does not perform, your shares get knocked, and production has got everything to do with management. But interesting at Sasol, the guy who's leaving is the financial director. Now, I'm not sure if you've got any insights, because he wouldn't be on the floor with the engineers. So I could hardly take any responsibility for it, but perhaps it just happened. When one does see that someone's leaving to go and pursue interests outside, that is usually code for we don't want you around anymore.
Agreed. Just to respond to your management, I mean, obviously there is truth to that, but also take into account the difficult operating environment that South African companies have at the moment. Transport, Transnet, Eskom, load shedding. You know, to manage production today as a big manufacturing plant is certainly challenging. So now put perhaps obviously some blame at management, but certainly the environment that has been created in South Africa has certainly been difficult.
Onto the asset class returns in rands, top to bottom in the past month. SA equities did best, 3%. Global equities down 4.2%. We know all about that. But if you go back 3, maybe 5 years, global equities still far and away outperforming what's happening on the JSE.
Correct. It's been an amazing environment for international equity investors. Having said that, one has to be quite specific. What do you mean by global equities? And global equities is broken up in terms of 70% of that weighting, or a little bit less than that, is actually the US market. And that's been the driver. So if you haven't been in a US mega tech shares, you could have missed that quite easily. So very much not a broad rally in global markets, quite concentrated to the big shares, which I think is quite fortunate for investors, but you know, potentially does come with a bit of concentration risk going forward. I think even though South African equities have struggled relative to global equities by a significant amount, it's also nice to know, you know, you still got a nice real return, a return after inflation. So if you, over that period, you can say probably inflation averaged maybe 5.5% or closer to 6%, but you know, that's a 4% real return. So investors who stayed the course over a long period of time, despite the tough environment, still got rewarded with inflation beating returns.
And of the individual sectors here in South Africa, resources top of the pops over 5 years and now over the past month as well.
Correct. It's quite an amazing graph, this. If you look at how volatile resources have been over the 3 months, it's up 15%, but over 3 years, it's flat. And then over 5 years, it's been up, the best performer, up 11%. And I think we've got quite a interesting market. And if you are a stock picker or share selector, the importance of getting your sector calls right in the South African market is, it cannot be understated. It is such a big driver of returns and when you rotate from financial shares to resources shares. So, you know, you can do a lot of work on individual stocks, etc. But in South African market, if you don't get your sector calls right, you know, it's going to be very difficult for you to outperform.
And that also adds to the argument for active managers. In South Africa, if you just take a bet over 5 years, okay, you would have done fine out of resources shares, but you would have been very sore in part of that period. Just looking ahead to close off with, we've got our elections here in South Africa on the 29th of May. Load shedding on the 30th. I see you say, David, that's a bit cynical.
It is a bit cynical. At Corin, we do like to try and have a bit of humor here and there. I'm not really a conspiracy theorist and I'm not cynical by nature. I just think it is a little bit coincidental that running up to the elections, we've had our best period of electricity supply. So we thought we might as well ask the question, when does load shedding come back? And
I don't think the public are fooled. I think we're all saying, fine, we'll take it. We'll take the electricity, the no load shedding during this period. And pay for it later. I guess that's really the reality, isn't it? Because they're going to be running those turbines at a hectic pace. And then I suppose the big thing is for a safe, free, and fair election. Let's pray for that.
Agreed. It's an important month for our country and for investors and for our future.
David Bacher is with Corian Capital. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.